Welcome to Globalized and Mobilized, a program featuring the best of free speech radio news reporting on the changing world economy and the movement to make it responsive to human needs. I'm Matt Martin. Please stay tuned for Globalized and Mobilized. Many organizers have come to the struggle over globalization through their own experiences of trying to maintain democratic community institutions in the face of national and international economic pressures. The Pacifica Foundation, the United States' oldest and largest progressive radio network, has been an important resource for progressive movements in the U.S. for more than 50 years. In recent years, however, it's been torn by conflicts between community members and programmers who want to keep grassroots voices present and powerful on the airwaves, and national management, which has centralized power and resources while considering the sale of one or more of the five stations in the network. The latest clash in the battle over Pacifica came on Friday, December 23rd, when management changed the locks of Pacifica's New York station, WBAI, and several programmers were banned from the station. David Landau has this report.
At about midnight last Saturday, during the pre-Christmas weekend, locksmiths changed the locks at WBAI, and security guards began barring entrance to the station to all except hosts and guests of regularly scheduled shows. The new locks came on orders of Pacifica Executive Director Bessie Wash, who at the same time appointed WBAI programmer Utrice Lead as interim station manager and fired the station's program director as well as the producer of WBAI's morning show. During the weekend, security guards were closely restricting admittance to the station. Among those who didn't get in was WBAI morning show co-host Amy Goodman, who also produces her national show Democracy Now! At the station.
When we attempted to go in as workers, as producers, the security prevented us from going up, and then they called in police, and they pushed us out of the building. And so we were outside as Bessie Wash, Utrice Lead, were upstairs.
Crisis has been brewing at WBAI since October, when Pacifica management gave Goodman a new set of guidelines for Democracy Now! And threatened to fire her if she failed to obey. Then, last month, Pacifica Executive Director Wash informed WBAI General Manager Valerie Van Isler of her removal from that position. Van Isler said she would not observe the termination date of December 31st and would appeal the decision. WBAI staff announced that they would not cooperate with a Pacifica-imposed regime at the station, while listeners mounted a series of protests against Van Isler's removal. Then, last Friday night, came the lockout, the appointment of Utrice Lead as interim station manager, and the further staff firings. Harper, a producer for WBAI's morning show Wake Up Call, spoke about Pacifica's notice of dismissal, which she received by messenger at her home early Saturday morning.
It said that my personal belongings would be sent to me, and that I was no longer considered staff, and if I should enter the premises, that it would be considered trespass.
An identical procedure was also taking place at the home of program director Bernard White, a 20-year veteran of the WBAI staff and a co-host of WBAI's Wake Up Call. Neither Harper nor White received an explanation for the dismissal. On Sunday, WBAI interim manager Lead said that the firings of Harper and White were not her decisions, but those of Pacifica Executive Director Wash. On Tuesday morning, Lead told a staff meeting that she was banning three volunteer producers, Janice Bryant, Serene Roberts, and Eileen Sutton, from the station. And while regular programming at WBAI went on, a group of security guards who reported to Lead were on patrol inside the station with walkie-talkies, producing what staff members called a chilling effect. In an effort to explain these events to WBAI's listeners, Lead and Wash went to the air in an interview Tuesday afternoon. Lead began by asking Wash about the lockout.
The question about the changing of the locks in the middle of the night. Four women and a baby.
Well, that's true.
I mean, four women and a baby. But with that being said, what I wanted to do is we need to secure the space. And I wanted it to be the time it was the least disruptive to the staff and to the station and the operations as possible. And so I felt, you know, when is the time when there's the least people there?
Lead then asked Wash about the staff dismissals.
What led to the firings, and why were they fired?
Well, I think that it's only fair to them and to the foundation not to talk about personal issues. So it was a personal decision. There was cause, and they were terminated for cause.
A few moments later, Wash appeared to backpedal on the firings of Harper and White.
Staffing decisions and day-to-day operations of the station is up to the general manager, not me.
Those statements drew an angry reaction from fired program director White.
I don't understand how, on one hand, I was terminated for cause, and then later on she'll say that, but I could be hired back. I don't know where the cause went. I mean, what was the cause of this termination, and why? I think the reason why I was terminated is because it is part of the vendetta that Utrice Lead has against the leadership at WBAI.
Lead, for her part, went on air with a two-part message for listeners. First, thanking them for their support, and second, informing them that she would not be inviting listeners to help resolve the station's troubles.
The record shows that we have asked you to do certain things and you have outperformed yourselves. You have done everything that we have asked you to do to maximum effect. And that is a treasure. And if we regard you as treasures, we couldn't possibly abuse you with problems that are, again, within our total capacity to solve.
WBAI listeners are rapidly joining the protest, however. A community meeting on Wednesday night drew an overflow crowd of more than 1,000. For Free Speech Radio News, this is David Landau.
After the WTO meeting in Seattle, anti-globalization activists looked for the next high-profile target for protest. For many, the cry was A16. The April 16th meetings of the International Monetary Fund and World Bank in Washington, D.C. Free Speech Radio News correspondent Allison Hawks was at the A16 protests and filed this report.
By noon on Sunday, police estimates put the crowd at 10,000. The mostly younger protesters were still on the street blockades, while others joined a permitted rally on the ellipse near the White House. Longtime activists were calling the fight against corporate power a movement. Ralph Nader compared the mass activism that first surfaced in Seattle to the most important social change efforts in the last century.
You are in the long tradition of the civil rights movements and the environmental movements and the worker health and safety movements. And you know what about all those movements? While it took some time, and while the dominant business community opposed every major social justice movement in this country, including Social Security, even though they opposed and delayed, all these popular movements prevailed, and so will you.
A lot of the optimism about the future of anti-globalization efforts lies in the alliances that are building. Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, Rich Trumka.
Although we come from human rights and civil rights and women's rights and student rights and children rights, and we're fighting together. Let them know we're protesting together, standing together, fighting together, marching together, and by God, we're going to win together. Let them know.
Trumka says students and union members are building ties to one another. And he says workers also have to work together more closely across international borders.
When the IMF and the World Bank and the WTO insist that a country like Chile privatize their social security system, that gives aid and comfort to everybody in this country who wants a privatized social security. Whenever they say that they have to downsize and outsource and lower the wages in another country in order to get a loan, those products then compete with us and those wages drag down American wages. Until you get labor standards, environmental standards, and health and safety standards that are built into these trade agreements and with the IMF, the WTO, and the World Bank, they will have worker pitted against worker. Those workers are not our enemies, and our members know that.
While protesters included advocates of nearly every cause, there were few people of color involved, and the demonstrations attracted little participation from students who weren't already members of participating groups. University of Pittsburgh student Tanisha Jones says she thinks there are several reasons for that.
Many times, you know, when certain things get organized, we get left out, or we feel left out, or like we don't belong, so there's no point. And, a lot of people feel, well, you know, this isn't my concern. You know, I'm here in America. This doesn't affect me. You know, in the black community, we got a lot of things to worry about, and we want to take care of our own stuff, you know. But it's important, you know, everybody needs to get together and do this.
The fight against globalization will likely move to Los Angeles this summer for the Democratic convention, and to Philadelphia, where the Republicans will meet for their nominating convention. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Allison Hawks.
His teeth as though they were just jelly beans, and he tore the wheels off a police car with just one yank, and the windows of the Nike town he smashed to smithereens. 50 gallons of their pepper spray they shot into his eyes, and he looked directly at the stream and didn't...
Although the International Monetary Fund and World Bank held their annual meetings in the U.S. Capitol, the impacts of their policies are felt primarily in the Global South. IMF austerity programs have been a matter of intense controversy in Argentina throughout the year 2000. In June, 50,000 demonstrators took to the streets of Buenos Aires to denounce far-reaching budget cuts made in response to IMF demands. And as Travis Lee reports, 95% of Argentine workers went on strike in November to protest a visit by an IMF mission.
The government of Fernando de la Rúa will complete its first year in office on December 10th, but many Argentines wish it was already his last. The stern president has gone through a laundry list of austerity measures in the past year, including a tax hike, labor reforms, and cuts to social spending. The country is struggling for economic reactivation, hoping to fight the nearly 16% unemployment. In one last show of financial responsibility to Wall Street, De La Rúa hopes the IMF's mega loan and ongoing support will finally give foreign investors the confidence they need to open new factories and offices here and create new jobs. The 2001 budget, which contains reforms the IMF required in order to seal the latest loan, is now making its way through Congress. The president's spokesman, Darío Alessandro, says it's good policy.
Without losing sight of the needed responsibility that we must have so that spending doesn't spill over, it allowed us to incorporate articles and more resolutions for productive and social spending. That's why I think this is a budget that is both progressive, since it points us toward growth, and very responsible as well.
The budget scraps the minimum Social Security benefit for retirees, raises the retirement age for women from 60 to 65, and forces provincial governments to freeze social spending for 5 years. Meanwhile, De La Rúa is deregulating the healthcare market by decree, making room for HMOs, or prepaid healthcare, as it's euphemistically called here. Even the most conservative of Argentina's three umbrella unions is enraged. Food Workers Union President Rodolfo Dyer.
Argentina lacks a policy of growth, production, and decent employment.
Unions made sure their anger was heard loud and clear as they organized a 36-hour national strike last Thursday and Friday. The strike included noisy roadblocks like this one to disrupt what little transit remained. Unions say the national walkout achieved near full participation with the absence of 80 to 95% of the country's 13 million workers. It was the third national strike against De La Rúa and had the biggest impact. Juan Pablo de Seil is a leader of the State Workers Union.
The 2001
budget is directed towards the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Really, what we're doing in Latin American countries is the same as in Seattle, against the IMF, but stemming from hunger and desperation. They're cutting all the social programs. They're punishing the working class once again in a country that has enormous potential.
The president called the strike incomprehensible and says his new economic reforms will bring prosperity and reverse Argentina's nearly two-year recession. But talk with a few strikers, like this man named Alberto, and it's only too clear what Argentines think.
The Yankees are already knocking at the door, you understand? If they come in, they'll devour us. I don't want to be devoured. I want to live.
Yo quiero vivir.
In Buenos Aires, I'm Travis Lee for Free Speech Radio News.
Loans from the IMF to developing countries often come with conditions attached, which weigh most heavily on the poor. IMF loans in Nigeria have been tied to increases in gasoline prices paid by Nigerian consumers. And in May, those prices went up by 10% in line with IMF requirements. Ironically, those worst hit by the price increases are oil-producing communities, especially those near oil pipelines, who gather precious fuel from leaks in the line. Earlier this month, more than 50 people were killed when a fuel pipeline caught fire near the fishing village of Abute Oko, near the city of Lagos. Huts and wooden houses were engulfed in flames, and many of the dead were reported to be fisherfolk, burned alive in their dugout canoes. Free Speech Radio news correspondent Sam Olakoya filed this report in July, when 300 people scooping fuel from a leaking pipeline near the Niger Delta town of Wari were burnt to death in an explosion.
Birds are about the only signs of life left here, but the signs of the incident are still very visible. This place is littered with burnt-out metal containers, which the victims were using to scoop the fuel. There are shallow graves all over the place because families of the dead victims decided to bury them where they died. Incidents of villagers scooping fuel from leaking pipelines have become quite common in Nigeria in recent years. Steve Ubana is energy editor of the Lagos-based Newswatch magazine. He blames the situation on the rising prices of fuel.
Petroleum product business is a very lucrative venture, and most people have realized that if they can get these products free of charge from the pipelines, they can make money out of it to make a living. There is a great deal of high level of unemployment in the society today, and people have resorted to vandalization as a way to make a living. And you discover that wherever they discover they can get petroleum products, they sell it. And now that the petroleum product prices in the country have been increased from 20 naira to 22 naira, it means that if they can sell a gallon of petroleum product, they could make as much as 100 to 150 naira. And if they can get as much as 10 to 20 gallons a day, it means a lot of money for them. And this is the only way they feed they can survive.
Fire disasters resulting from villagers scooping fuel from leaking pipelines have become quite common. The worst of these was recorded in Jesse village in 1998. More than 1,000 villagers scooping fuel were burnt to death. Hundreds of children like this have become orphans as a result of the Jesse fire incident. With no one to care for them, they have dropped out of school and spent the whole day playing. Even children like 15-year-old Doris Amakeke, who still have one surviving parent, are hardly better off. Her mother, who is the only surviving parent, was so badly burnt that she can no longer care for Doris and her five brothers.
My mother have injury. My father is dead.
There is nobody to take care of my five brothers and me. We have not eaten since yesterday. Rather than go to school, we remain at home and play because my mother lacks the money to buy books and school uniform for us. Neither can she afford our school fees.
Anticipating that higher gasoline prices would lead to more cases of pipeline vandalization, the government has set up a task force to monitor the pipelines. Acting under an unwritten shoot-at-sight order, members of the task force have in the last 2 months shot dead about 20 villagers living near oil pipelines. Ogale, a community where two of Nigeria's four refineries are located, is a target for fuel thieves because several oil pipelines from the refineries run through the community. These school children from Ogale village recently lost three of their schoolmates. The children were shot dead by members of the task force while watching people scooping fuel from a pipeline near their school. The incident remains a source of outrage in the village. Oil pipelines may indeed continue to be a liability for communities living near them. Besides setting up the task force, the government, which owns the pipelines, has taken no other measure to protect the installations. Fuel thieves have a good time punching pipelines. Those who bear the brunt of this act are villagers who go to the scene to scoop leaking oil. They are either burnt or shot dead. These victims have hardly earned any sympathy from government. As the commander of the task force puts it, Nemesis is catching up with the victims. Oji Awala fears that further increase in fuel prices would ultimately attract fuel thieves to communities like his. The result, he says, is hardship for the people.
Well, it is a serious fear. Because of these two refineries, all the pipeline carrying petroleum products to outside, to the north, are located here. And with the increase in price of fuel, there is a tendency that they will increase the vandalization of the pipeline in order to cut away the petroleum products. There is no how the increase in the price of fuel will not be linked to the vandalization.
The suffering of local people living with oil pipelines in Nigeria is set to increase as the IMF and the government concludes the deal to raise gasoline prices. Both say an increase in prices is necessary to stop gasoline smuggling to neighboring countries. For Free Speech Radio News, I am Sam Olukoya in Ogale, Nigeria.
In Mexico, voters elected a new president, and in doing so, they ended the more than seven decades of rule by the Party of the Institutional Revolution, or PRI. The man they voted in, Vicente Fox, is a former Coca-Cola executive who advocates expanded free trade and open borders with the United States. To get a sense of what Mexico will look like under Fox's leadership, you don't have to look any further than Baja California, where his right-wing PAN party has governed for the past 10 years. Workers at the Hanyang plant, which produces car parts for Hyundai, have been trying to form an independent union. They say the PAN has colluded with the PRI to block workers from organizing to improve wages and working conditions in the foreign export factories, also known as maquiladoras. Robin Yurovich filed this report from Tijuana the week before the Mexican elections.
Last week, Hanyang workers thought they'd have a chance to at least air their grievances before a panel of Mexican and U.S. government officials at a hearing on the right to organize a union. Mexican officials agreed to hold the meeting as part of the settlement of a complaint filed under the North American Free Trade Agreement on behalf of Hanyang workers. About 50 of them filed into a meeting hall at a luxury hotel in Tijuana as a federal labor official was proudly describing the freedoms that Mexican workers enjoy. But just as the independent unionists began to unfurl banners that said freedom to unionize, they were punched, thrown on the floor, and kicked by supporters of the government union as representatives of the U.S. and Mexican departments of labor looked on. The workers, shaken and some of them bloodied, retreated to the hotel lobby and began to protest.
Las empresas internacionales que vienen a explotar a la gente mexicana, fuera!
At issue are what are called protection contracts. Companies along the border routinely sign agreements with government-controlled unions before workers are even hired. Those contracts protect the boss and keep wages low, at about $7 a day for the millions of workers who produce U.S. consumer goods, from computer parts to Sony TVs. In the hotel lobby, Secretary General of the independent October 6th Union, Enrique Hernandez Felix, told the Undersecretary of Labor that the attack inside the meeting room illustrated the repression he and the other workers had faced since they'd started organizing an independent union 3 years ago. Here in Baja California, says Hernandez, there's an agreement between the government unions and the local PAN officials to keep workers from choosing their own union. There's no secret ballot union elections, he says. You have to vote in front of company thugs. And he says there's payback. In our group, there are people who've been fired because of the union. Undersecretary of the Federal Department of Labor, Javier Moctezuma Barragan, told Hernandez and the others he was sorry about what had happened.
Nos unimos en lamentar los acontecimientos que se dieron.
Still, he offered no solutions. When you're talking about issues that are emotional, he says, you have to do it through dialogue and reason. And Moctezuma Barragan would not agree to let the independent unionists participate in the hearing. They remained shut out, despite the fact that it arose from their complaint. Unionists on both sides of the border say the events demonstrate that under NAFTA, workers' rights are a low priority. What's more, says union official Enrique Hernandez Felix, both the PRI and the PAN have cooperated to help out big foreign companies and squelch union organizing. Hernandez says there's cooperation between the federal ruling party authorities and local officials of the PAN. It's not political, he says, because if it were, there'd be no logical explanation for why pre-affiliated unions and PAN authorities would agree to maintain protection contracts to benefit the bosses. There are economic interests here, he says. Hanyang workers say they'll organize a mass protest march in Tijuana and ask U.S. and Canadian unions to denounce the attack they suffered. But in the long term, as the maquila industry grows and more workers come to the border searching for a better life, they're likely to become a powerful force for more worker-friendly politics along the U.S.-Mexico border. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Robin Jurovich in Tijuana.
So in the past year, people around the world have been protesting economic injustice and corporate globalization. But their visions for what a better world would look like vary as greatly as their economic and geographic backgrounds. Independent Media Center reporters spoke to protesters throughout the year. IMC reporter Jade Padgett-Seekins prepared this report about the future they'd like to see and what they think needs to be done to get there.
No corporate greed. Let the world work for the needs of people rather than for the profit of a tiny number, and we will have a most wonderful world.
Yeah, it's an equal world without rich people, without poor people, without people who can't live and who don't have to think about what to get to eat tomorrow and where to sleep this night. That's the better world I dream of.
I would like to make people more sensitive so that there's no need for police, for instance. I would like to take away fear of people, because that kills everything. If people don't trust each other, it's not a nice world.
I believe in anarchy, so I believe in small communities with people that have solidarity between each other, people that help each other, people that live in peace. But to bring it, sometimes you need to use some power.
Well, I'd have to say it'd have to be a socialist world, because it's the only alternative that I have come across that actually allows every single person, no matter what their creed, no matter what their color, to be treated equally and have the same rights, and for everyone to be able to take an equal part in society. And that's the way the world should run, isn't it? It should be peaceful. You can have the whole thing, there's a whole image of revolution equals blood and knocking people out. You don't have to do that. It can be peaceful.
Me and my wife, we represent the homeless action here in D.C. Our job is to make sure that WTO, the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, and the IMF, the World Money Fund, know that we are tired of their practices and their policies on poor and disadvantaged people all over the world. The reaction has to come from the people in this country, the ones that's sitting down and looking at the 6 o'clock news. They have to become motivated and activated in order to bring about the change. See, we're not just here to be hanging out. We come down with a representation of a group of people who are poor and disadvantaged. I myself am homeless. She's homeless. We sleep in front of a church that just told us we had to be move off the property. We're being evicted from a church. On top of all of that, we're here because there is no national health care. I suffered from cancer. I have terminal cancer. They gave me 6 months to live. But I can't get treatment because I don't have the money to go get the type of treatment that I need. This is all part of this capitalistic situation that we're living in.
For more news from the IMC, visit their website at www.indymedia.org. Free Speech Radio News is a production of Pacifica Reporters Against Censorship. Over 40 reporters on four continents and in 14 states are on strike against the Pacifica Network News for its censorship of legitimate news stories. These reporters are putting their livelihoods on the line. For more information on the strike, check out our website at www.savepacifica.net/strike. That's www.savepacifica.net/strike. This special broadcast was produced by Aaron Glantz. Thanks to Vanessa Tate and Leslie Holm for technical assistance and to the National Radio Project for leasing us space. I'm Matt Martin. Please tune in again next week.